And now it is my special and great pleasure to introduce Maria Yeritsa and Lotte Lehmann, who really need no introduction to anybody who has any idea about opera in our time. And I feel if we cannot learn some behind-the-scenes facts and fancies about Ariadne of Naxos from such knowing prima donnas as Madame Yeritsa and Madame Lehmann, we never shall. And the way I can help is by restricting my interference to an absolute minimum. And although I know I shall find that very difficult, I will do my best. Now, Madame Yeritsa told me the other day I should not ask her about the first version because she'll have something terrible to say about it if I did. So since I never do what I'm told to do, and even less ever refrain from doing what I'm told not to do, I will put this question to Madame Yeritsa. Let me just refresh your mind. What we call the first version was a strange concoction. It consisted of a German short version of Molière's Le Bourgeois Gentilhomme, which Mr. von Hofmannsthal had translated, and it was then followed by the opera Ariadne, or rather what in our version today is called the opera Ariadne, that is to say, the opera proper, in contradistinction to the prologue. Now, somehow it didn't work, because 4 years after the first performance of that original version, they got together again, or rather they got together very much sooner, but they decided on a new version and then premiered it 4 years later, and the first one is completely forgotten. In fact, it is so much forgotten that I cannot find a copy of it anywhere. Now, Madame Yeritsa, you were in both. You were in the first version where we first had the Molière, and you were in the second one. Why did the first one not work?
Because it was boring. It was a wonderful sleeping pill. Everybody fell asleep.
Now, may I ask you this? This is a very good answer. Starting out well. But I also know that it is perfectly true because you find it even in the letters between Hofmannsthal and Strauss. But let me ask you this. Surely you agree with me that the opera proper was the same, more or less the same.
Yes.
I know that Zerbinette aria was somewhat different. So what was boring about it?
Because there was no connection between the opera and the Vorspiel.
Oh, I see. Well, that is very interesting.
And you when see, it came to Ariadne, the people didn't know why they had that first...
Right, yeah. Well, what happened is that the original was a Molière play, and Hugo von Hofmannsthal thought that was a very smart idea, to have the play first. It didn't work. It didn't work for many reasons. As you say, people were bored. People came for the opera, and yet for what? An hour and a half, they sat and had a play. Now, who played in that play? Surely not the opera singers.
I don't.
So you didn't play in it.
No, I don't recall it. But Hofmannsthal, I don't recall that he was very happy about it. Right away, they had the argument with Richard Strauss about it, and they, right there and then, they decided that it has to be changed because the critics and the public resented the first version of the Vorspiel.
Yeah. Madame Lehmann, did you see the first version at that time? I know you were not in it for one
very... I sang Echo.
You did?
Yes.
But not in the premiere?
No.
Yeah.
Well, I sang it 1912, I think it was.
To put our friends of the radio audience into the picture, I'll ask you a question. I know the answer, but they're not. Why were you not in your role in the first version?
You know, there was no role for me.
Well,
the Echo was a role just for a beginner.
Yeah, that's very true. We are talking about the role of the composer, which is now that wonderful role only in the Vorspiel, only in the prelude. It doesn't appear in the opera. And in that first version in which Madame Yeritsa sang Ariadne, there was no composer, as we all know. Did you ever see at that time, did you see the original version with the Molière?
Yes, but I really have forgotten it. It is long ago, and I have a very vague remembrance of these performances. I really don't know.
Well, that's a bad sign, or it's rather a good sign for what we are discussing. Obviously, Madame Yeritsa is quite right, because it was a bore.
Yeah.
The people didn't want it, the critics didn't want it, you saw it and don't even remember it. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's
I'm quite
true.
Sure the first time you saw Rosenkavalier, you remembered it, or the first time you saw Salome,
you
wouldn't say you don't remember it. Now, I'm already breaking my promise, I won't talk so much, but I'll come to that later.
Please do so. I love to hear your voice.
That is very kind of you, Madame Yeritsa. The point, however, is that the audience
the
wants
you
to hear
talk,
you.
The less I have to talk.
Yes, that is very good. But the trouble is that nobody except my wife will agree with that because the audience wants to hear you and Madame Lehmann. You see, that's our problem. But anyhow...
Well, you talk for me, Yon, and you tell everything what is necessary.
That's all right. And you contradict me if I say something that is wrong.
If you're wrong, I will say no.
Right. Well, I will contradict you now. Because you said Strauss and Hofmannsthal got together right away and agreed that won't do. That is very true as far as Hofmannsthal is concerned, and very untrue as far as Strauss is concerned. Now, if you can contradict me on that, we'll have an interesting subject. Can
you? Oh, that's very interesting, because Strauss told me he's very stubborn, but he know that Hofmannsthal is right.
But you do agree that it took Mr. von Hofmannsthal quite a while to convince him. I brought the letters.
Yes, but I don't think it was very, very convincing.
I think Strauss just wanted to go on to his next opera, and because that's the way he was.
That's right.
Well, you both knew him well. Isn't that true? Ariadne was done, and he wanted to go on to, what was it, Frauenschatten?
And what is next, he right away say, after the premiere, yeah. He said, what comes next?
Right, Madame Lima.
Nevertheless, I am surprised that he didn't warn that, because it would have been such a challenge for Strauss to combine this comedy of the first of the prelude with the opera, with the tragic opera. And also the mixed up with these commedia d'arte and the singers.
Yeah, you mean in the prelude?
In the
because the mixture between the serious opera and the buffa you had,
yes,
in Ariadne,
yes,
proper too. Well, they didn't really agree very much. How about the composer? You know, can you tell us something about the genesis of the role?
What is the genesis?
The,
I don't understand that word.
The creation of the world. How did it come about, let me put it that way. The Genesis is the beginning of the world, I think.
He had written the part of the composer for a very excellent singer in the Vienna Opera. And I came 1916 to Vienna, and I had it as an understudy, which really hurt my feelings very much, because in Hamburg I had sung already my whole repertory, and people liked me.
Madame Lehmann, who was the singer who was supposed to have sung the composer?
Marie Gotthard Schroeder. And she canceled a rehearsal shortly before the premiere.
How did you get her to do that?
Oh, no. I have never been bad in my life.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
And I was called to the rehearsal because Strauss was there, and without the composer, the whole rehearsal couldn't have.
You mean there was no?
Place.
You were the understudy. You were the official
understudy.
Yeah.
And then after the rehearsal, Strauss, with the brutality of a composer, nicht wahr? He decided very quickly that I should sing the premiere, which was marvelous for me.
And what happened to poor Gotthard Schroeder?
Yeah, now I hated very much to do that to her, because I admired her very much. And Gregor, who was our director at that time, has written in his memoirs that it was the only time of his life that a soprano had refused to sing a role for another soprano. Now, I don't want to put a halo around my head.
I said
very quickly, yes.
Yes,
Lottchen, where come I in?
What's
don't
the
you remember?
You
were spending... Lottchen, you were standing there, and he said, I'm without a composer. I said, there's a born composer standing right in the first wing.
Oh, I didn't
with
know
the
that.
Most beautiful voice. Why
oh,
don't
really?
You take care?
Oh,
well,
thank
you see what
and
you mean.
And you started right away there, and then in the rehearsal, to take Gotthard Schroeder's place, which she was ill. She had a laryngitis.
I know.
And she couldn't attend. Without any warning, she stayed home. And Strauss said, now what will we do without the composer? We cannot. I said, here, he's your understudy. She's a wonderful voice, and you have to take just only. And she starts to sing and conquered, and the premiere was signed to her.
Wonderful, Mitzi, thank you, after all these years, for your help.
But let
and
me ask
you... And really poor, wonderful
But
composer.
Poor Madame Gotthard Schroeder wasn't as sick as all that. Am I to understand she could have sung the premiere, only Strauss...
But she couldn't anymore, because Strauss gave
like
it to Lotte Lehmann.
Well, we can well understand that. Although, in all fairness, we must say Madame Gotthard Schroeder was a very great...
Oh, she was a very,
very
great
wonderful,
great
was the first...
Now... That Madame Lehmann has told us the story, and you have added to it, Madame Gerritsen. I will now tell you that Strauss, and I'm sure you remember that, was violently opposed of having any one of you ladies in there, because he was sick and tired of having girls. No, wait a moment. Strauss wanted it, and Hofmannsthal didn't want it.
Yeah.
There's a letter where Hofmannsthal, where Strauss says, I want another Raffrano.
Yeah.
And Hofmannsthal said, I'm so sick and tired of these girls with their trousers on. Mm-hmm. And then Strauss explained it to him, and we all agreed that Strauss was completely right and Hofmannsthal was wrong. Can you imagine the composer sung by a tenor?
That would be horrible.
No, yeah, and you know, Strauss said, I asked him once, why have you written these two roles for women? And he said, can you bring a tenor who is very young, is an excellent actor, and has a wonderful voice? If you can do that, then a man could sing it.
Yes.
But that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yes, but our Estwick, I think, Bacchus. Estwick would be the perfect composer.
Yeah.
The figure, the youth,
yes,
everything.
And,
but he said, I cannot use that because he was the Bacchus. But I can see that our interview will be full of controversies.
Well, that's fine.
That's just fine.
That's what we are here for. Now, the story about this, let's talk about this for a moment because I know everybody's interested in that. The question of a boy being sung by a girl, which is, of course, much more prominently exemplified in Rosenkavalier than it is. And you all know, I have never seen it, and I'm grateful that I haven't. Sometimes it has been tried. Rosenkavalier has been sung with a tenor. And anybody who has ever heard it has told me it is horrible beyond belief. Yes. It is rather strange, a young tenor being young and handsome enough to sing a boy, allegedly 17 years old, that just doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, that's it.
Yeah.
I think Asbich could have done it, but there was only one person like
In one opera house, madam.
Yeah, that's
madam
it.
But why couldn't we have sung the boys? Because we had the youth, we had everything what required of those parts.
I agree with you, and so did Richard Strauss. It seems Mr. Hofmannsthal didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
oh.
I think it has always been a perfectly lovely idea.
No, I think it was always a ladies' hater.
Hofmannsthal? Well, that's a new one. Of course, no, the problem is much
but
older.
But why
didn't
you wrote a part like that, which required a woman?
I think, Madame Giritz and Madame Lehmann, if you permit me to say so, I think it was the other way around. It wasn't that Hofmannsthal was a lady's hater. It was that Strauss liked the ladies so much. Could that possibly be the reason?
Oh, no.
No.
With his wife on the side, she would have killed us all.
No,
I've never yet known that a husband is prevented by a wife from being a lady's lover. That's
no,
no
but
one
he adored his wife.
Oh, that was a wonderful marriage. Oh, no.
No, but I didn't. Ladies, you surprised me. You put words into my mouth. I said nothing of the kind. I was talking strictly in artistic terms. I was talking in terms of Richard Strauss as a composer.
But it required our answer.
You name, Madame Lehmann, Madame Gerritzer, will you name one really great tenor part in all of Strauss's work? Tell me one.
No, the Kaiser in Frauen und Schatten.
Relatively speaking, yes.
Yeah,
but again,
it's a very important.
Again, not a typical, not the way you think of a Caruso part.
No.
Or even a German Caruso.
Never.
You see, there's Bacchus in our Ariadne.
Yeah.
There's the Kaiser, the Emperor.
Yeah.
In this, as a whole, the tenors are buffos or character parts, like, say, Herod in Salome.
Yes.
There is no, in terms of Wagner or Verdi or Puccini, the tenor as a lover, as a young, radiant lover, does not exist.
But he knew that he can depend on us. We were really good.
Now you're confirming.
We never caused him any trouble.
Now you're confirming what I'm saying. It isn't that Hofmannsthal didn't like you. It is that Strauss liked you so much. Well, let's not pursue this too far, but it's an interesting... It is an interesting sideline. Now, you were talking about Bacchus, and I think we are jumping the gun a little because we mustn't assume that our audiences know everything about the work.